Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Mark Warner, along with Chris Lisa. We are going to take a quick look back at the second round of the playoffs here, but just in a little quick around the league segment, talk about some coaching changes, talk about some GM activity, what we thought of the second round going through it and what it kind of means going forward for a few of the teams. Some coaching changes, some coaching staying the same. We'll hit on all that here in our first 15-minute segment. Chris, how are you this evening, sir?
I'm doing good. My hockey heart's a little sad, but I'm doing good.
Oh, you got to be all right with that. You guys got out of the first round for the first time in 20 years. The 10-year Mike Milbury curse, as quoted by the Buffalo Kid, our former co-host on the show, has expired. I think you mentioned one thing that I wanted to hit on real quick regarding the Islanders was that we were doing our preview show with Matt Pryor from over at the Hockey Writers, and we were talking about that series with the Panthers in the first round, and you said that this playoffs will, for better or for worse, be Jonathan Tavares' defining moment with the Islanders. And in my estimation, I think he defined himself very well in this playoff series. What say you?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, the Lightning was, it was to me a coin flip series, and even though the series only won five games, those game three and four losses at home where, you know, in game three they're 38 seconds away from winning, and a missed assignment with the goalie pulled, Nikita Khrushchev made him pay, and in game four they were all over them and, you know, just could not expand the lead, and, you know, it's pretty hard to win 1-0. You know, the secondary scoring or just scoring in general, at times this team has gone through funks during the year of hitting the wall scoring, and that's going to be points A, B, and C from this fall season, especially with Travis Hamonic rescinding his trade request. His family situation is at a good place, and he never wanted to leave. So that kind of leaves things a firm footing there. So Gord Snow's job this summer is to find alignment with Mr. Tavares and improve the second and third line scoring, both from either within or externally. And I read a lot about the former Kings goalie, Mr. J.F. Berube, that the Islanders are very high on him. So they have three goalies, and one will be moved this offseason, it sounds like. And it doesn't sound like it will be Mr. Berube. It sounds like it's going to be a Berube-Grice tandem. And Halak could be on his way out, so in a trade. So I think they're going to have a very busy offseason. Good year nonetheless, but everyone's wanting more, to say the least.
Let's take a look at what the other series in the East there. Capitals, everybody's wonder kid, superstar regular season, 120 points, President's Trophy, yada, yada, yada. Didn't quite get it done. Pittsburgh had too much for them. There's a lot of, I think there's two suspensions came out of that series. Pittsburgh just too much. Been a juggernaut since about the middle of February, I think. And hard to say that it's a, that's a veteran team in Washington, I would say. Hard to say that that's a learning experience for them to get to the second round and get out of there past that point. And Justin Williams said, I just saw today, that one of the reporters was asking him if the season was a failure, and Justin Williams, always forthcoming and forthright, said, yes, it was a failure. They brought me here to win the last game of the season. Unfortunately, only one team can do that every year, and this year it's not us. We had a great year. There's a lot we can hang our hat on, but at the end of the day, it was a failure. So where does Washington go from here? A perennial underachiever in the playoffs. How do they fix that?
Yeah, I think it's kind of rough. I mean, the Penguins have been playing incredible hockey since the beginning of March, so you know, will close
for
in
sure.
the last 2.5 months. And, you know, they, before the loss they had in this series, they lost by one goal, two of which went to overtime. And, you know, in game six, when they tied it up after being down 3-0, you thought, wow, if they can find a way and then go home for game seven. And, you know, this could be their defining moment to break through. And, but the Penguins were all over them in overtime. I tell you, watching that game with the Penguins wearing the black and yellow jerseys, I felt like I was watching a bunch of bees buzzing all over the ice. And, you know, but, you know, the Caps are built, you know, the key question for general manager Brian McClelland is going to be, can he get one more piece to make this team to break through? And that's going to be very challenging. And when I say one more piece, I mean another, in my opinion, Justin Williams type guy, be it on the blue line or up front, both for on the ice and off the ice. And, you know, given the structure of their cap, they're not going to want to break up their core, obviously, and then they don't have the greatest of prospect pipeline. So, and, you know, that's going to become a challenging to do. And maybe it's something the general manager won't be able to do over the summer, but it's something he'll have his eye on for about before next trade deadline. Maybe that would be more realistic. But, you know, everyone's, other than I think Jason Chimera and Mike Weber, those are their only unrestricted free agents at the core. This team will be back, and they're signed for one more year. TGOC and Justin Williams become free agents after next year. A lot of their top young guns, like Kanetsov, becomes an RFA. He's going to get a gigantic raise. So, you know, things are going to change, you know, a bit next year, so after next season. So they got to be all in for the Cup next year. Not that they weren't this year, but not an easy go for Capitals fans. They all signs kind of pointed like this was going to be the year.
Yep, Penguins just a little bit too much. Let's head out to the West there. Good season for the Stars. I don't think you had them in the playoffs or barely making it in. I don't think you had them in there, and I was kind of high on them. I liked what they were doing. I liked who they brought in, and they did have a real good year for them. They kind of had a little bit of a goalie let down there towards the end. Overall, I thought their goaltending was adequate, not superior, and probably was just about best case scenario was play a really hard fought second round series and call it a day and build for next season off of what they did, from missing the playoffs to winning that division, which we had pegged as the toughest division in hockey. And I think it played out with all of the early exits coming at the hands of that division. Good year for Dallas. St. Louis moving on there with a pretty resounding Game 7 win.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the only negative I could say about them is to improve, their goaltending needs to improve. And I think the two guys they have in Lettinen and Niemi, they are what they are at this stage of their career. And they're both signed for the next couple of years at least. I know Niemi has signed for two more years. Make a pretty good, you know, in the $4.5-$5.5 million range, and they need to improve on the blue line. So those are not going to be easy things to do. And actually, two of their top defensemen, Jason Demers and Alex Bologovsky, are unrestricted free agents, and odds are at best they'll bring one of them back. So they might look from some young blood from within, like you saw this year, them bringing up Stephen St. John, who was also came over on the Patrick Sharp deal. So that's going to be the challenge for Jim Neal, who's an excellent GM, to make this team take the next step. It's not easy in terms of, you know, having, for lack of a better phrase, B plus goaltending and, you know, lapses defensively to win the Stanley Cup. So to me, their DNA, you know, you saw the great, the good, the bad, and the ugly of the Stars, throughout the season. But they're definitely a strong squad, and they'll be back next year.
Oh yeah, I agree. I think they're actually probably better days are in front of them as opposed to taking a step backwards. You get one of those two defensemen signed and keep them at home, then tough to move those goalie contracts, though, when you've got $10 million plus tied up in two goalies, and yeesh, they kind of just play a mediocre playoff series. I mean, let's face it, they won the Western Conference. They're not horrible goaltenders by any stretch of the imagination. But still, if you want to get out from under one of those deals and bring in another top four guy to cut down on your goals against, which is probably what they need to do, it's tough to find a taker for those contracts. So maybe a little bit of a tough work ahead for them, but still a squad on the rise, I think. Look for Dallas the next couple of years to be much improved. I like Lindy Ruff as a coach, and I think he's got them headed the right direction. And last but not least, I thought wouldn't be as good a series as it was, but Shark Spreads turned into be a nail biter there until game seven. But
yeah, that was surprising.
Yeah, I thought they were
the way the game played out. I thought the Sharks would find a way in game seven, but I didn't expect a 5-0 game, especially with how the rest of the series was played.
Our young squire there in San Jose, outdueled Jonathan Quick, outdueled Pekka Rinne. I guess the only question really remaining, and we'll pose that in the third segment of the show, is once you get in the conference finals, it's probably a little bit different beast there, and we'll see if Martin Jones can hold up against an energized, Quick, improved offensive St. Louis Blues team. I think special teams will probably maybe tell the tale in the conference finals in the West, but Martin Jones will have a big say in the outcome of that one way or the other, don't you think?
Yeah, he's looked solid. I mean, he's looked like a veteran between the pipes.
Yep.
He hasn't blinked. So, you know, so far so good. I mean, it's funny. Sometimes with these young goalies that look great as backups, and, you know, when they get the full-time gig, sometimes they break through like Martin Jones, and sometimes they don't like Jonathan Bernier. But to be fair, sometimes it's also the situations they're put into as well. So, obviously, a lot more backing for Martin Jones. But, I have no questions about him going into the next series.
Okay, well, we only got a couple minutes left. We had a few coaching changes. Sutter signs on to stay with the Kings, 3-year deal. Team option for year three, reporting at being $3 million plus per, which I think makes him either the second or third highest paid coach in the league. Boudreau out in Anaheim. Minnesota lets Mike Yeo go and brings him in almost immediately. And then Ottawa brings in Guy Boucher, who then turns around and brings Mark Crawford back from the Swedish Elite League, where I don't know too many people know this, but coached Austin Matthews, the consensus number one pick in the upcoming draft, to be his assistant there. So interesting changes. Any thoughts on that real quick? We got about a minute.
Yeah, no, I guess Boudreau over the Wild, but the Wild at a time and place where their roster, there's not a lot of flexibility, so the only way for them to kind of break through is with the coach to get the most out of that orange of that team, and I guess they feel Bruce Boudreau is that guy.
I don't know. I think I don't know. I'm well documented on Coach B there. I think they got to let Vanek go one way or another. It's not working out for him there, and bring in a little bit more scoring. I think defensively they're fine, but we'll talk more about that maybe in segment four. We got to cut out to a break, and we'll be back with our guest. We'll be right back. Hello, hockey fans, and thanks for listening to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Make sure you check out all our episodes on SoundCloud, iTunes, and HockeyTalkRadio.us, the Internet's first 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week, all Hockey Talk radio format streaming station. Check it out. Hello, hockey fans. We're back from the break. Thanks again for joining us on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We're now joined by Mike Pepping. He is a Blues writer for the Hockey writers.com and also covers the Blues for KSDK News in St. Louis. Mike, welcome to the show, buddy. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
No, you guys, you got to be pretty happy in Blues land now. Conference finals after a let's say a little bitter disappointment. Yeah. So things are looking good. Let me just fire off a real quick question. We know Ken Hitchcock's been on the hot seat here for, you know, last year for sure, and this year if it was another first round loss to the Blackhawks, he's probably down the road. Is his job safe now, making the conference finals, you think?
Well, you know, I think regardless, his job is kind of safe. You know, last year a lot of people were calling for his head. We just needed a lot of organizational change, and a lot of fans and analysts alike actually thought they didn't make enough change really to make a difference. Obviously, Doug Armstrong knew some things we didn't about prospects, and even though a lot of people knew Robbie Fabry was the real deal as long as he could stay healthy, there were still question marks along the way with our depth and with filling the gap that you know, we had. And obviously when we traded for Troy Brower, we traded for heart, not skill, but he's given us both. So Armstrong made some good moves, and you know, Hitchcock's part of it has always been he's almost best friends exclusively with Doug Armstrong, so Armstrong's always given him kind of an open ticket. They know that Hitchcock's nearing retirement, but he kind of said, I'll give you 1 year contract until you're ready to retire. So unless the Blues end up going over October in October, I don't see Hitchcock really getting fired until he decides to retire. So I think this year has really helped his rapport with the fan base and the community, but I don't necessarily think his job is any more safe than it was, because I think he was already pretty cushy based on his relationship with Doug Armstrong.
Interesting. That goes against the prevailing wisdom, like you were saying. A lot of the fan base and media outlets were saying that this would be a make-or-break year for him, and that's an interesting point there.
He definitely won over the room this year, so that also helped, because, you know, one of the problems in the past was that him and his players had disconnect, and it would just lead to, you know, just not taking that extra stride, not really grinding as hard as you could on a certain shift that would cost us.
Notably, with TJ Oshie coming a little bit public last year, a little bit, which may be why Armstrong moved him down the road.
Yeah, that was an awkward interview to be in.
Yeah. Oh, you were there for that.
Yeah, I was standing right in front of him when he brought it up. So
ooh.
It was quite the experience from all of us to pick our jaws up off the floor after he just came out and said it.
Wow. Yeah, so probably a reason why he's down the road there. So here we are, St. Louis slayed the dragon, killed the beast, dethroned the champs. Talk just a little bit about what that meant. You said Hitchcock got a hold of the room there. Talk a little bit about just what that means to not only the fan base, but to the guys in the room to actually know. It's one thing to go into a playoff series thinking that you're going to be competitive. And now I think going forward out of that series, the guys in the room actually know that they're a playoff competitive team. Is that a good read on what happens there?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Hitchcock, it wasn't all him. It was a lot of the leadership core in general that stuck around. They realized that they were lucky to stay through the summer last year. And at the end of the day, they had to make it happen now. They've been the better team in a lot of their playoff series, dating back to their first round loss against Chicago a few years ago. But unfortunately, they just, you know, they couldn't find that heart. They couldn't put it together. They couldn't make it translate. I mean, they made Devin Dubnyk look all world last year in the playoffs. And then, obviously, they played Chicago, and Chicago just played a pretty normal game and beat him easily. And that's kind of the goalie Devin Dubnyk is as long as you get him moving and get traffic in front, he's not stellar by any means. I mean, he'll make the saves he's supposed to, but there's plenty of holes to win games, and the Blues just couldn't find that level to find their composure throughout a series to really steal it, and I guess to just win the games they should to move on. So this year, I think they knew, again, it was make it or break it, and they really bonded together. I think bringing in the heart of Troy Brower really helped. I think Steve Ott settled down in his lesser role, and I think his injury actually made us better, because him coming back from that double hamstring surgery not only gave the Blues time to, and you know, all the injuries, it gave a lot of players that wouldn't have got time, especially in a Ken Hitchcock system, the time they needed to develop, and they seized the moment. So now we have this impressive depth, and we have balanced scoring. I mean, I think we have 12 or 13 guys that have 5 or more points in the playoffs. That's pretty ridiculously balanced scoring. So,
right.
It's just one of those things where Hitchcock definitely, you know, he's more calm and even keel. He's letting the players control the game more than him dictating what's going to happen. He's not line juggling as much as he used to, and I think all of that mixed with, you know, the players' heart motivation and focus this year has really been what led them to where they are now.
Kind of a similar path there to the conference finals for St. Louis and San Jose, and where San Jose had to slay their dragon in the LA Kings, and then St. Louis obviously had to dispatch the defending champs and painfully to say juggernaut. Yeah, they both did that, and then they both had long protracted second round series, both going to game sevens, but then both pretty easily dispatching their opponents in the game seven. So I wanted to touch a little bit. We were talking before we came on, and you did mention the leadership group, and how much of it is directly related to David Backes and being more of a disciplined player in tight or trailing situations and not taking the stupid penalty in retaliation and playing whistle to whistle and being the disciplined, structured team. Even if they get down in a game, it seems to me that group has matured to the point where they are able to stay within their structure and weather those storms, which I think was a trademark of the Kings run in 2014, where they played 3 straight game 7s, is being able to maintain that structure even down 3-1 in the third period. Just playing your game, north-south, get it in deep, don't take the penalties, good things are going to happen. How much of that is an improved leadership from David Backes and the other assistants?
You know, it is a lot of it. I think TJ Oshie leaving really changed the attitude in the locker room. And I think David Backes being away from his buddy TJ Oshie now has given him the chance to really reflect and realize where he was going wrong and what he was doing right and what he needed to focus on moving forward. He did take a stupid offensive penalty in game 6, and that was the game where the Blues had a chance to close out the Stars, and they didn't. So,
right.
You know, he still has that side of him in him. But showing that he's been able to focus on the play, get to the dirty areas, and shrug off all the BS that's going on around him has really been what's brought him to that next level. And, I mean, he's already got more goals in these playoffs than he has in the last 5 combined.
Wow.
So, that's obviously, staying more focused on the play is really benefiting him well. And since he's the leader of the team, it goes from him down. So people
for sure
are really feeding off his example, seeing his leadership, seeing his foot movement, and seeing his focus. And, you know, it's really paid dividends, and it's a large reason why the Blues have the success they have this season, this postseason.
For sure. Chris, I'm gonna throw it over to you for a little bit. I know you want to jump in here, so let it rip, buddy.
Yeah, sure. It's great to have Mike on the show. I guess my first question is, for me, the Blues have been a little up and down in the playoffs, but the key is that they've played their best hockey in Game 7, in the game that they've had to win, which they haven't done in the past. What do you see, Mike, in terms of going into the series against the Sharks as your number one concern regarding the Blues?
Yeah, definitely the Game 7 has helped, and it's kind of weird because as we talk about Game 7, it always reminds me of the player and coach interviews this postseason, and some of them just make you think that they want the Game 7, like the way they talk in early rounds, and then after they lost Game 6, Hitch, Steen, and I believe Brouwer all talked about how special Game 7s were, and it's obviously it was Brouwer's 8th straight, which is unreal, but it's one of those things where it's weird. It's like they almost want to play Game 7 to prove how good they are, and they did that against Dallas. But coming into San Jose, my biggest worry is actually just that San Jose is the better team at playing the disciplined system. We saw in both Game 7s that San Jose and St. Louis play a very similar style of play. And it just depends. You know, a lot of times when the Blues play an opponent that plays similar to them,
they don't do so well. They don't fare well because they don't know how to defend themselves because they're so focused on, you know, matching up against other teams and other strategies normally. So that's my biggest concern, is just making sure that they stay on top of their game and they can adapt to San Jose's rushes. I'm not too worried about the series overall. I do think it'll go 6 or 7 games, but as long as the Blues stay healthy and don't run out of gas, which that's actually another big worry I've had this season because they were so injured. They had the highest IIT Corsi 4 relative percentage, which is the most injury to key players by a large margin this entire season, by over 100 points actually this entire season. So I've been waiting for that to catch up to them, but maybe, you know, the team doctors really did rehab them completely and they came back 100%, so they got extra rest instead of being more tired if they would have played the whole season. So it could work for our benefit, but I'm a little worried about, you know, them finally running out of gas. You saw it from Brian Elliott a couple times towards the end of round one and in the middle towards the end of round two, where he showed some fatigue, started playing deeper in his net, and the other teams obviously capitalized on it. And then we saw Jake Allen for most of the game in round two. Overall, it's just, they just got to play their game and keep it going. And I don't see any team really matching them if they do that, especially San Jose, because their core is aging. Marlowe and Thornton are in their upper 30s, and they really rely on Pavelski and Couture and Marlowe and Thornton to gain all their points. And if you look at the Blues this postseason, they held Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Patrick Sharp, Jamie Benn, and there was a fourth player in there from the Stars.
Spezza?
They held them to, Jason Spezza, yeah. Yep. They held all of those guys combined to just 4 goals.
That's pretty outstanding.
So it might have been 6 goals. It was either 4 or 6 goals, but that's uncanny. Those are some of the best players in the world.
For sure.
And the Blues defense, even with all their breakdowns, were still able to hold those players. So I don't think that, Couture and Pavelski are playing at a level that's above where those players were. So I think the Blues are in good shape as long as they stay, you know, healthy and motivated and can really move their feet.
Do you think the key to this series, or the biggest key, is maybe not stopping, but the Blues at least containing the Sharks' power play? Because that is humming right now.
Yeah, I definitely think that special teams is going to loom large in this series. It's been a sticking point ever since the NHL really shifted to more offense, and especially after, you know, they added the trapezoid and the offensive zone face-off rules and the defender putting a stick down first no matter what, and the, you know, delay of game in your own end, all of that, leading to more offense. I think that power plays and special teams in general have really become the cornerstone of winning games. And the Blues actually have great statistics against the Sharks on the special teams this year. They were almost at 30% on their power play. And again, that's only 3 games, but, that's impressive. And they were almost at 90% on their penalty kill. So I'm hoping they can continue that. But since the Sharks' power play is red hot, the Blues have shown that, especially at home, they have some problems on the penalty kill. So they really need to tighten up and really need to dig deep to make sure that they're filling the passing lanes, keeping active sticks, and really blocking shots. I mean, they had 35 block shots in Game 7 against Dallas. That's ridiculous. That's like block shots for an entire team for a whole series sometimes.
Right.
So if they can manage that, I'm not worried. But if they show those gaps again and San Jose can capitalize, it's going to be a really tight series.
I'll give you a key, and you let Mr. Hitchcock know. If Joe Pavelski is standing between the dots, under the hash marks, unguarded, he's going to score. How many freaking power play goals has this dude stood there unchecked, right on the doorstep, and just taking a pass on the tape and thrown in the net? Maybe.
Yeah, that first one, it was a power play yesterday, but in Game 7 against Nashville, he was just sitting there on top of Pekka Rinne untouched and just had to chip it straight through Pekka.
Yeah, 3 of them against Jonathan Quick, too. Maybe guard the guy.
Yep.
Well, hey, Mike, we're out of time. Thank you so much for coming on the show, sir. We appreciate it. Make sure you guys follow Mike Pepping at Pep30 on Twitter. He links to all of his content there. You can go to KSDK.com and also thehockeywriters.com to find him. Thanks again for coming on, buddy. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me, and have a good night, guys.
Okay. Thanks for coming on, and we'll be right back. Hello, hockey fans, and thanks for listening to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Make sure you check out all our episodes on SoundCloud, iTunes, and HockeyTalkRadio.us. the internet's first 24-hour day, 7-day a week, all hockey talk radio format streaming station. Check it out. All right, hockey fans, thanks for hanging with us. This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast, along with Chris Lisa and Mark Warner. We're here back to look at the Eastern Conference now with Zachary Devine. Good enough to join us. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good, sir. We got some hockey to get to. But first, let me say, if you guys are into prospects and draft look-aheads and stuff like that, Zachary's your guy. You can follow him on Twitter at Zach the Bear. That's Z-A-K-K the Bear on Twitter. He writes for the Last Word on Sports.com, the Dobler Prospects, and also the HockeyProfits.com. So if you want to find Zachary's content, he's also a Sharks fan, by the way, so we almost could have tag-teamed him into the Western Conference segment as well. But we might have had a war on our hands. We had Mike Pepping on. He's a Blues writer for KDSK there in St. Louis. So we might have had to separate you guys, take off the gloves. So we're going to look at the Eastern Conference with Zach. And Chris, go ahead and jump in, fire away.
Yeah, this is an interesting series to me, Zach, from the standpoint of both teams want to play the same style. Very fast-paced, very up-tempo. What do you think has the advantage, given that?
You know, Pittsburgh and Tampa, they're really kind of mirror images of each other when you look up and down their lineup. You're exactly right. They play up-tempo. They roll four lines. They play pretty they distribute their defensive minutes pretty well, evenly as well. You know, they both have their big horses on defense, but everyone takes a turn. And coming down to it, I think Pittsburgh probably has a little bit of a nudge there just because they're getting some really solid secondary scoring. But these two teams just really, I think, stack up pretty well against each other.
Now, would I say, being an NHL observer a bit, that if I was a fan of one of these other teams, three teams still left, that, okay, should I be worried about the Penguins given that the Capitals kind of held in check Crosby and Malkin and yet still lost the series?
You know, that I think that's exactly going to be the key to this entire series and maybe even the postseason. The secondary scoring that Pittsburgh is able to muster, I'm not sure any of the remaining teams. You know, it sounds like a homer, but maybe the Sharks with the Logan Couture line might be the best bet. But when you hold Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby to a goal and three assists in a series, and the rest of the team is still able to thump you, I mean, really, what else can you do? I mean, as a head coach and as a decor and a goalie, you just be kind of scratching your head. But the depth scoring that they had. Hagelin had three goals, four assists. Phil Kessel had two goals, four assists. Bonino, who was a Sharks pick originally, he had two goals, three assists, plus the overtime winner, which ironically Hagelin and Kessel assisted on. They just roll those lines at you, and they're out what against maybe your second pairing. It's just really hard for teams to stack up, and I think especially Tampa Bay.
As a guy who's got a great background in terms of the league itself, but also in terms of the prospects, are you a little surprised? I mean, granted, a lot of people were high on Matt Murray, and rightfully so, but has he surprised you a bit on how well he's played and how composed he's played?
You know, I think anyone that would come in and say, oh, this is exactly the Matt Murray we were expecting no matter what, I think they're just flat out lying. He's just been really a revelation. I mean, you think back to what you were doing at 21 years old. Were you backstopping, anything to a championship? And I mean, I don't even remember 21, quite frankly.
Yeah, tell me.
And maybe beer pong.
Yeah. I do remember a lot of that. That actually did trigger some memory.
There you go.
But you look at what, you know, he's done over a really short time. You know, he was good with the Greyhounds, you know, with the Baby Penguins, really just kind of stepped up. He's nothing short of a revelation, like I said earlier. And I think no matter how this postseason turns out for the Penguins, I think they've really got to look long and hard at what's going on. They've got Fleury there with a no-movement clause, and, you know, depending on how the expansion draft goes, those NMs.
Whoops.
So you sure don't want to...
He is eligible for exposure because his no-movement clause only really pertains to waivers. He has a partial no-trade, so...
For sure.
I'm going to jot that down.
Yeah, there's the way the rules came out. The no movement clauses are eligible to be exposed. The no trade clauses are not eligible to be exposed, and I don't think that counts as a protected player either. Take either Marc-Andre Fleury or Matt Murray over here in Vegas next fall. If anyone in Pittsburgh's listening, you know, go ahead and protect either one of them. We'll be good. Thanks. Anyway, moving on.
but exactly. So great. You know, one of them has to get exposed. What do you do? You know, you got a 21-year-old netminder that is earning his bones in the Stanley Cup playoffs on his way to a conference final, or you have a goalie who's had injury problems, he's had concussion problems. He's extremely good. I don't know if I'd put Fleury in the elite category, but Murray has, in a very small sample size, really dazzled.
Trade him to Calgary for picks, protect Matt Murray, and bring up your AHLer to back him up. And then after the draft, then you can make your other moves. There you go. Problem solved.
Yeah, and Zakhoff has played in the postseason.
He for sure.
Too terribly. I mean, Matt Murray's definitely won that job, and I think Pittsburgh's going to ride him, you know, regardless of anything, really. He's earned it at this point.
Yeah.
Even if he stumbles in a game, you've got to go right back to him.
Well, let me jump in here and compare. It's kind of similar to the Sharks and Martin Jones run to where Murray just beat Lundqvist and Holtby. Martin Jones just beat Quick and Rene. Both are going in their first run through the Stanley Cup playoffs. If you had to pick one of them to hit the wall, so to speak, I don't know if it's the pressure or whatever, but goaltenders going through their first Stanley Cup playoffs, usually if they make the conference finals, that's the end of the line. And obviously Ben Bishop in the last couple seasons, he's been lights out big game goalie, especially in the playoffs. I saw a stat in one of the preview things I was studying up on. In elimination games the last 2 years, Bishop's 5-0 with 4 shutouts. And then in the other game he allowed 1 goal. So you don't get too much better than that. If you had to pick one or the other to hit that wall, what would you think? Jones or Murray?
I would probably pick Martin Jones. He has played a lot of hockey. Before James Reimer arrived in San Jose, Alex Stalock was the backup.
Right.
And you know, Peter DeBoer just had to absolutely ride Jones into the ground. I was concerned about it just even in the first round. You know, we were able to get a little bit of rest for him. But still, he's just played a lot of hockey for that year one. With Murray, he's so young and frankly so inexperienced, he just might not even know to be scared,
right?
Quite frankly.
No, for sure.
He could just be going on adrenaline and just that youthful, you know, hubris and just be rearing to go every single night, no matter what the previous game was. Jones has obviously more experience, spent some time with L.A., probably never even thought about moving to Boston. He knew that he was getting traded. But with all that hockey he's played, in year one as a starter, I'd probably pick Jones.
Okay. Okay. I mean, for sure, I give Tampa the goaltending edge just based on Bishop. And I think the decor, I mean, they were rumoring Strawman to be coming back. And if he comes back, the decor edge goes to Tampa Bay, in my opinion, too. But Hedman's been a beast. But Pittsburgh's defense has been surprisingly well. Let me break down some special teams real quick. We got about 5 minutes to go. Pittsburgh's power plays at 27.5% in the playoffs. The Lightning have only scored 7 out of 42 times on the power play. But the Lightning's penalty kill has only allowed 5 goals throughout the playoffs. But Tampa Bay's the most penalized team left in the playoffs. So I think if it comes down to it, special teams might just tell the tale, Chris, don't you think?
Yeah, I've been watching both of these teams a lot, especially Tampa against the Islanders. I would agree. I think that their penalty kill is strong. The Islanders were able to get the power play goals in that series, but their secondary scoring wasn't able to break through. But that's not going to be a problem for the Penguins, I don't think. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah, the Penguins' secondary scoring, I think, is going to make it. They've just been able to produce consistently, and there's no reason to think that they can't against Tampa Bay. Strawman, last report I saw, he's going to be out for game 1 and 2, and he's plausible for 3, they're saying, and that's all very preliminary. And then, obviously, Stamkos, you know, you get hourly updates on him, and
yep.
he's not off the blood thinners. But everything I'm reading is it sounds like he's going to give it a go in this series.
I saw a little bit of that today.
Oh, really?
Too. Yeah, I saw a little. He was skating today. I know for sure they showed a little bit of footage of that on the network there early in the afternoon, and they were saying that he looks like he's always looked on the ice, but it comes down to getting off the blood thinners and being medically cleared to play. So,
right.
if it might turn the tide if Stamkos and Strawman both come back games 3, games 4, if Pittsburgh's got a 2-1 lead there, be interesting to see what kind of magic John Cooper can do with the lineup there when they come back in. Be an interesting series. If you had to go gut feeling, we've only got about a minute left, Zach. Where are you headed in this series? Give me a prediction.
I'm going to take Pittsburgh in 6. Kucherov and Johnson are both shooting well over 20%. I'm just not sure that's sustainable against a really competent Penguins defensive core, and then Matt Murray backing them up. Even if Strawman and Stamkos come back, there's going to be game rust, and the conference finals isn't where you want
sure.
to be shaking that off. I'm taking the Penguins in 6.
And real quick on Sharks Blues.
Yeah, give me a
I'm
Sharks Blues.
The Sharks in 6.
Okay.
I'm taking the Sharks on 6, not just because I covered them for Last Word on Sports. I think that what we're seeing, much like Pittsburgh, quite frankly, the secondary scoring that the Sharks have been able to generate with the Couture line and down on the third line with Tierney getting some tough minutes. He had 2 goals in game 6. The defense, the top 4 for the Sharks, I would put up against just about anyone else in the league, and Martin Jones has been more than capable. So I would take Sharks in 6 as well, and that would be a East Coast, West Coast matchup that I think a lot of fans would tune into.
Yeah, it would be an interesting Sharks Pens. I don't know. I think I'm going to hit Tampa Bay in this one. If Pittsburgh can't play with the lead, I think that's very important to keeping Matt Murray calm and focused throughout that series. If they do get behind, It'll be interesting to see. We'll learn a lot about him in this series. If Tampa gets out to a 2-0 lead early, go 3-1, I think we're going to learn a lot more about him and probably have him tested more against Tampa. We're out of time. I'd love to have you back on the show here in a little bit. Maybe if the Sharks make it into the Stanley Cup Final, we'll call you up and we'll break down the Stanley Cup Final. Zachary, does that work for you?
Great. That'd be fantastic, gentlemen.
Okay, once again, Zachary Devine joins us. He's a Last Word on Sports contributor for the Sharks, Dobler Prospects, HockeyProfits.com. Follow him on Twitter, at Zach the Bear. We got to head out to the break, and we'll be right back. Hello, hockey fans, and thanks for listening to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Make sure you check out all our episodes on SoundCloud, iTunes, and HockeyTalkRadio.us, the internet's first 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week, all Hockey Talk Radio format streaming station. Check it out. All right, hockey fans, thanks for sticking with us. One more little wrap-up me and Chris will do for you. We want to thank Mike Pepping at Pep30 on Twitter. You can find all his content through his Twitter feed. And Zachary Devine, you find him at Zach the Bear, Z-A-K-K the Bear on Twitter. Or go to Last Word on Sports, Dobler Prospects, or HockeyProfits.com if you want to look at San Jose Sharks content or look ahead to the draft that's getting closer and closer by the day. Zach's your guy. He's a good cat. Did a good job. We appreciate both our guests tonight. Well, Chris, I guess it comes down to you and me, buddy. Conference finals, break it down the East. Who you got?
Well, I tell you, Tampa is very impressive. I was very impressed with them. You know, their pace is incredible. Kucherov is amazing. Ben Bishop is able to shut a team down. You know, I'm a big fan of John Cooper. He's got a lot of Long Island blood in him.
I'm a big fan of Cooper, too. I think he's a great coach.
Yeah, so, but having said all that, I do think Tampa's going to push Pittsburgh very, very hard. But the Penguins are just, they're just humming right now, and it's everyone on that team. And like I said, what's scary is the Capitals contained, to say the least, Malkin and Crosby, and still lost. And the Capitals played well in that series. You know, Matt Murray looks like he's not going to let up. I think a big key for Tampa is they need, and the way they play, they're going to take penalties. So they're going to have to, that penalty kill unit's going to have to be very impressive. But I think when all said and done, Pittsburgh's going to wind up winning this in a very tight series in 6 games.
Oh, man. Well, my bracket's busted there on the NHL.com bracket challenge. We did okay in the first round, but not so much in the second round on what I did. So, in fact, I had Detroit beating Tampa anyway. So, I want to see Tampa Bay get out in front, and I want to see how Murray responds to that. Out of the two goalies that are left that have not made playoff appearances before, one or the two, if not both, will be playing their last series, I think. I think Martin Jones has more experience in the NHL. Well, I'm sure he does, and may come from a better structured goaltending development unit coming out of the Kings organization. And I'm not discrediting the development system that Murray came through at all. But when you look around the league and you had a Bernier and you had a Jones and you had a Berube and you had a Zatkoff and they're all in the National Hockey League and they all came out of the Kings system, they're doing something right with goalies. And I think Martin Jones has a better chance not to blink than Murray does. And I'm not saying Murray will. He's been fantastic. I think the goaltending advantage is too great. And besides, my boy, the Buffalo Kid has some family connections there in the office, with the Tampa Bay Lightning, so it's kind of a homer pick for me, but I'm going to go Tampa in 7. I'm going to say Lightning. If they could stay out of the penalty box and keep that power play unit off the ice, then I think they do have enough secondary scoring to keep up with Pittsburgh. I guess that's all I have to say about that. Let's look out at the West. I think... I think Pep did a great job breaking that series down. Where do you see the West going? You kind of hinted at it. I think I know where you're headed.
he did have a great point that made me go, And that's when Mike talked about how they stopped Taze and Key and Ben and all of Spezza and really limited all those top guys. Now, having said that, the Blues still needed seven games to win both series. So they have had a little gaps, for lack of a better word.
Right.
The thing is about the Sharks, and this is going to be, to me, another very competitive, very long series. The thing about the Sharks, to me, is, and this is amazing that we're talking about this, is a team that, you know, mentally just haven't been able to hang with it in past with past top squads. But this team has had three moments where they have gotten off the decks, and that was Game 5 versus the Kings. Looks like they were going to wrap up that series, being up 3-0 in the second period, and within a few minutes being tied and then coming out and, with all due respect, thumping the Kings in the third period. Losing, I believe it was Game 4 against Predators in triple overtime, having a goal disallowed, coming back in Game 5, winning that. Being down in games, actually being 5 or 6 minutes away, I believe, in Game 6 from advancing to the Conference Finals. Oh, give up the tying goal, then lose in overtime there, no problem. Come home in Game 7 and thump the Predators. So, and to me, their best players are playing out of this world. I like the Sharks in 7.
Sharks in 7. So you're looking at a Sharks Pens final there, kind of where Zach went.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll just be a contrarian and say Blues in 6. Why not? I don't have any real reason for that. Just to be a contrarian, I'll take Blues Lightning, and you can ride Sharks Penguins, and we'll see where we end up. How's that sound?
That sounds good. Like I said, I think you can make a very strong argument either way in each of these series, and that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. Well, buddy, I got to run. I got to get to a little family business here Friday evening. Playoffs are starting. We've got a lot on the plate, and we got to run. I'm going to try and get this published out. Thanks again to our guests, Mike Pepping and Zachary Devine. Make sure you follow them on Twitter. Look them up on Last Word on Sports and KSDK.com in St. Louis for all of Mike Pepping's content as well. So, Chris, I got to run. Thanks, buddy. And we'll talk again there right before the Stanley Cup Finals. Unless I miss my guess, I'll have a hockey team by then. Keep your fingers crossed.
Sounds good.
Okay, we'll talk to you later, and we're gone.